And once again, Sunday is upon you as you listen to this netcast, not broadcasting, of course, as in days of old, but you can still catch us on the Huff Archives and on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz. More details, give me a call at 831-423-4833. And I may be able to enlighten you if I can figure it out myself. So we have lots, lots of flashbacks today. But we're going to begin with some contemporary news. And in fact, there's actually protests coming up today, according to that very, well, questionably, sometime reputable paper, the Santa Cruz Urinal, which calls itself the Santa Cruz Sentinel. On page three, kind of an interior page, there is a story that reads anti-flock rally planned, and this says it's going to begin at the Santa Cruz Governmental Center, which I take it is probably, I think it's the county building, but I'm not really clear. It's apparently, I'll read a little bit of the story for you, even before our theme music, so you can get a jump on things. This is Anti-Flock Rally Planned Santa Cruz by Caroline Hemphill. Local advocacy group Get the Flock Out, in coordination with other Northern California groups opposed to the use of automated license plate reader cameras, will hold a rally at the Santa Cruz Governmental Center Sunday. Since this story came out on August 11th, that would be August 16th, which is today if you're listening to this on August 16th. Nationwide, groups like Get the Flock Out, including the national organization DFLOCK, are planning a week of actions starting Sunday. The kickoff event for the Bay Area will be hosted in Santa Cruz, the first city in California to cancel its contract with the Flock Company. Other events throughout the week included rallies and teach-ins in Oakland, San Francisco, Gilroy, and San Jose. We wanted to create this really powerful movement in the Bay Area, especially with Silicon Valley in our backyard, to explain that mass surveillance does not keep us safe, said Kimberly Wu. Wu is a community organizer with Services Immigrant Rights and Education Network in San Jose. The organization is currently suing the city of San Jose for its use of automated license plate readers. Since the Santa Cruz City County Council's decision in February, Flock, of course, are cameras set up on different posts, which Santa Cruz has rejected. But I'll read more, which hopefully will mention it in this article. Wu is a community organizer with Services Immigrant Rights and Education Network in San Jose, the organization currently suing the city of San Jose for its use of automated license plate readers. Since the Santa Cruz City Council's decision in February, other anti-flock organizations in Northern California have reached out to Santa Cruz County advocates to organize, Wu said. Since Santa Cruz's decision, a handful of other jurisdictions in the Bay Area have canceled their contracts with Flock, including Los Altos Hills, Mountain View, and El Cerrito. It's a nationwide issue, and Santa Cruz understood the importance of it and the importance of our privacy, and that isn't the best way to go about safety, said Get the Flock Out organizer Lourdes Barraza. The rally will include several speakers, including Santa Cruz mayoral candidate Amy Chen Mills and Peter Gelblum from the Northern California chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Ryan Coonerty, who's running against Amy Chen Mills, will not be there. And indeed, there is a protest being planned to expose Coonerty's anti-homeless policies, both proposed ones and the ones he's voted for in the past. Actually, a week from Sunday, I believe it is. I could be wrong. It could be a week from Saturday, from last Saturday. Coming over to you listening to this would be next Sunday or next Saturday. I'll hope to have more information for you on that. And keep your eyes out for the posters that are lurking around the area. In fact, I'll give you better information as we go deeper into this netcast. Manny, who declined to share his full name due to his sensitive immigration status, is a part of Get the Flock Out and will speak at the rally. He said he will discuss concerns that Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, can access data from flock cameras in a way that is difficult to trace. It's a very personal issue, Manny said. The use of automated license plate readers, including those provided by flock, has proven controversial, to say the least, in Santa Cruz and nationwide. Many have raised concerns about the security of the data, worrying that it could be used by federal immigration agencies or hacked by civilians. Others say the cameras are an invasion of privacy. Barraza said that the use of such cameras is also more common in areas with more people of color. My concern is that the amount of cameras that we have in Watsonville, Barraza said, it's just insane, and we are predominantly people of color. My concern is just the amount of cameras. The rally, said Barraza said, is about educating the community on the potential drawbacks of the technology. It is also a call to action, she said. While Santa Cruz canceled its contract with Flock, Capitola and Watsonville still use the cameras. Capitola's contract for 10 cameras recently auto-renewed, and Watsonville expanded its contract to include 37 cameras. David Rodriguez, Watsonville's assistant police chief, told the Sentinel earlier this year that the city has no plans to consider canceling its flock contract, saying the technology helps the police solve crimes and make arrests. We're becoming more and more reliant on technology, and it's only going to continue down that path, Rodriguez said. Flock is just one of those pieces of technology and we're using efficiently and will continue to use. Barraza said that Get the Flock Out is still in talks with council members from both cities and encourages members of the public to reach out to their representatives. License plate cameras and other surveillance technology were recently the subject of a segment on HBO's Last Week Tonight with host John Oliver. Oliver said that they have a high error rate and pointed out examples where the cameras were inaccurate. The host even called out Santa Cruz specifically when talking about predictive policing methods, referencing a method used by the Santa Cruz Police Department starting in 2011. Thank you, Zach Friend. He was one of the brains or brawn behind that. Santa Cruz later became the first city in the U.S. to ban predictive policing and facial recognition technology. Back in January, when the Santa Cruz City Council voted to terminate the city's flock contract, council members acknowledged that this technology had helped police solve crimes. Still, they said, the community's lack of trust in the cameras, paired with privacy concerns, drove six council members to vote to terminate the contract. More on this, I think, later. But if you want, you can find out yourself more by going to this protest at the Santa Cruz Governmental Center, which I noticed the Sentinel does not give you instructions on where it is or tell you its address or actually mention the date. It just says next Sunday. And this is in a Tuesday paper, which I don't want to sound too conspiratorial, but it's not their usual policy when they're announcing events. So, for instance, there's another event mentioned in the Sentinel from on Thursday, 2 days later, St. John's Helpful Shop Sale. St. John's Helpful Shop Sale Thrift Store is having a huge blowout clothing sale throughout August 16th. I'm not interested in this particularly, and I doubt my listeners are either. But this continues and says, shop hours are Sunday to Tuesday, noon to 4, and Wednesday through Saturday, 10:30 to 5. Questions, call such and such a number. And that's a lot of detailed information. There isn't much of a story, but it's been added to the Coastlines column. So, more shortly, but here's a little music to lull you to sleep by.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. and ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So we've begun talking about, Flux cameras and such. Here's an article in the same issue of the Santa Cruz Urinal as the story about the anti-flux rally planned for, I found out it is, actually there's an Amy Chen Miller who is running against Ryan Coonerty for mayor that has having a kind of a get-together Woodhouse second kickoff rally, I guess it is, day after tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Tuesday the 18th. That is the rally, is it Tuesday the 18th? If you're listening to this on the 16th, it will be in 2 days. At 5:30 p.m. at 119 Madrone Street, that's at the Woodhouse Brewery, where there's Dominican Rehab on one side, used to be the Sports Authority, I'm told. And this is two streets away from and parallel to Highway 1. So you can check that out if you'd like. But here's this story by Ryan Sabalo of Cal Matters, reprinted in the Urinal. And it's license lawmakers debate license plate readers in the November 11th, 2026 Sentinel. In the past year alone, they've helped catch suspected murderers, bank robbers, and hit-and-run drivers. They've located dozens of stolen cars and helped send a wildland arsonist to prison. They're also distrusted and despised by privacy rights activists on the left and on the right. Just last month, police accused a suspect in Monterey County of yanking down three of them with his pickup. They're called automated license plate readers. Every day, untold numbers of Californians drive past the thousands of cameras that at least 230 police and sheriff's departments have posted along roadways or installed on their patrol cars. The cameras in real time capture and read plate numbers, then cross-reference them with law enforcement databases of vehicles police want to locate, such as stolen cars, getaway vehicles, or those that may be carrying a missing or wanted person. Since 2019, California Democratic lawmakers have unsuccessfully sought to restrict how people use the technology. They're trying again this year with a bill that would add limits on how long police may retain license plate data, how they access it, and with whom they share it. Police agencies and officers' unions across the state oppose the latest measure, which is similar to a bill that Governor Gavin Newsom, whom I call Gruesome Gavin, or Gruesome Newsom, depending on your preference, vetoed last year. This bill is about one simple principle: protecting the privacy and safety of Californians while ensuring law enforcement tools are used responsibly before it's too late. The author of this year's legislation, Riverside Democratic Senator Sabrina Cervantes, told the Assembly Privacy Committee last month. She did not respond to a request for an interview from Cal Matters. Critics of the technology cite high-profile examples of California police using license plate data inappropriately, including to stalk or harass innocent people. As Cal Matters reported last year, California officers have repeatedly violated an 11-year-old state law that prohibits sharing the data with federal authorities and others outside the state. 404 Media also reported last year that a Texas cop searched a national license plate database to try to locate a woman who had an abortion, leading to fears that conservative states that criminalize abortion are accessing California's plate data to hunt down patients or providers. Cervantes' bill would generally limit to 30 days the amount of time agencies could keep license plate data, unless it pertains to an active investigation or as part of a search for missing people. I interrupt to say, I don't know how the hell you could enforce that if you, once the data is in the police department's hands, seems to me they can do what they want with it and then tell you that they're eliminating it after 30 days. But I wonder what safeguards they're really talking about that might make some real sense. It also sets limits around who can access the data and adds training and search tracking requirements. Police and sheriff's departments will be prohibited from entering into contracts with camera companies that provide default access to plate databases that federal and out-of-state police can search. That provision is in response to Flock Safety, a prominent license plate reader company that allowed federal authorities to search local license plate data as a part of a pilot program, said Tracy Rosenberg of Oakland Privacy, one of the bill's supporters. Police departments learned after the fact, like our advocates did, Rosenberg said, and we all said, what the, pick your four-letter word. Flock Safety did not respond to CalMatters' request for an interview, but the company says on its website that it doesn't work with immigration agencies and it stopped its federal pilot program. Local agencies have total control over the data Flock readers collect, the company said. By default, sharing with federal agencies is disabled, the company wrote. ICE does not have direct access to Flock cameras, systems, or data, unless, of course, any of these local police agencies decide to send it to them, would be my thought, but what do I know? Why police are opposed? At least 39 police agencies and officers' unions oppose Senate Bill 1013. Combined, they have spent at least $5.6 million on legislative campaigns since 2000, according to the CalMatters Digital Democracy Database. Police say the technology has proved invaluable at helping them solve crimes. Tustin Police Chief Sean Thulies, president of California Police Chief Association, said the technology helped clear an innocent man. It also identified a suspected killer when a woman was shot and killed on a street in the Orange County city in May. The woman had just testified against her ex-husband in a restraining order case, making him a prime suspect, Thulies said. But Thulies said that thanks to the city's 102 license plate readers, 8 of which are from Flock, detectives quickly ruled out her ex-husband and were able to apprehend her former boyfriend at the Mexico border. He's now charged with first-degree murder. It's technology mixed with good investigative work, he said in an interview, but within one weekend we were able to arrest the suspect for this person's murder. Of course, one thing that this police department is not telling us is how many times they have been charged with misusing the information. No data at all on that. The Berkeley Police Department noted similar successes after 52 Flock cameras were installed last year. In a report to the Berkeley City Council, the department noted license plate readers had been used in 121 cases, contributed to 58 arrests, and led to the recovery of 37 stolen vehicles. The department noted its rate for solving robbery cases climbed from 34% in 2024 to 49% the following year, thanks in part to the license plate data. The technology has fundamentally improved how officers patrol and how detectives investigate crimes spanning a range of serious offenses, including robbery, kidnapping, carjacking, burglary, weapons violations, organized retail theft, stolen property, and DUI, the report said. Again, my comment missing from this information is any discussion by the BPD, the Berkeley Police Department, of how many times they had to acknowledge that there had been abuses that happened, or how many complaints were received from Berkeley civil libertarians about problems that had arisen because of this license plate reading. Why Newsom vetoed last year's bill? Such investigative success stories may have helped persuade Newsom to veto last year's bill, which would have required police to dump their license plate data within 60 days. In his veto message, he said the restrictions on sharing data and forcing departments to purge it would hinder officers' ability to solve cold cases and find missing people. Newsom also said there was no money in the budget to pay for the mandatory California Department of Justice audits last year's bill would have required. I mean, why bother to keep an oversight? Trust your local police department, right? To address Newsom's concerns, this year's proposal allows police to retain data to locate missing people, and it makes a state audit program contingent on future funding. Newsom's press office declined to say whether he has a position on the latest bill, which has advanced through the legislature, with only Republicans voting against it. The measure is now pending before the Assembly Appropriations Committee. Meanwhile, at least one Republican lawmaker is taking the issue to Congress. U.S. Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky recently shared a meme of a "Don't Tread on Me" snake wrapped around a camera. The riff on the yellow Gadsden flag says, "Don't flock me." I'll soon be sponsoring a bill to withhold federal money from municipalities and police departments that deploy flock and other style cameras to surveil law-abiding citizens, Massie wrote on Facebook. Rosenberg of Oakland Privacy said she understands the camera's usefulness to California police, but she thinks they become ubiquitous. Police, she said, also shouldn't have a permanent pass to keep mountains of data for as long as they want. This is a kind of balancing act. We as human beings also need some camera-free space, she said. We don't want to be on camera every minute of every single day. And that's lawmakers debate license plate readers in the August 11th, 2026 Santa Cruz Sentinel by Ryan Sabalo. Story actually written apparently through Cal Matters. And now, as I've taken to doing, and I'm going to do again, I'm going to be giving you musical breaks, probably a bunch of them through Ai Tsuno and David Rovix, some of which you may have already heard, but unfortunately, they're still quite contemporary and relevant, unfortunately, as the war in Iran continues and the war and murderous genocide in Gaza continues as well.
As the U.S. fires missiles and Iran does in return, as gas fields, oil wells all begin to burn, millions on the move, leaving the Persian lands, heading west to Turkey, east to Afghanistan, war with many fronts, like the Mediterranean, where you find another country. Israel is bombing part of Levant, which they wouldn't tune the Zionist need living room. And so there's a nation, they say soon will be gone. They say soon we'll be gone. going on. Divided by lines established by powers who thought they define, whose interest you saw as the same as your own, when your neighbors were being run out of their homes for resisting in Gaza complete demolition, which the Hebrew press says is the latest decision. They say it's down to the wire, the obliteration of Nabataean Tyre, where there's a nation, they say soon will be gone, called Lebanon.
And that one was called Lebanon, as you might imagine. All right, well, let's begin. Today is the, the 15th of August, 2026. I'm on the line with, I guess your name is Keith McHenry. And you are, shall we say, relaxing after a hard day of food not bombing. You got your finger on the pulse, but not exactly on the throat of things. But I think the movie, like, they have their fingers on your throat, but that's another story. What's happening with homeless people that I don't know about, that I should, or that perhaps I know about, but that you can put with a little more detail and, specifics?
Yeah, well, what's pretty ugly is that Housing Matters in the city have placed, probably the city is, or Housing Matters is probably blaming the city. They're probably saying they have nothing to do with this. That would be my, knowing their past. But anyway, for all along Coral Street, where there usually was, like, I don't know, maybe as many as 50 home tents, something in that area. If you went all the way from River Street all the way to Limekiln or to whatever that corner is, that's still,
I think so. Limekiln, yeah.
Yeah. And then, so anyway, that they have this fencing system that is, it's kind of a double fence, and it makes sure you can't be on the sidewalk or anything like that and put up a pup tent. And then it's got, signs, metal signs saying that you could be arrested if you went in there, stuff like that, the municipal code. And when I went there right after the homeless meeting, Century's homeless union meeting, and it was just so sad. There was only one woman, a homeless woman there, and then I saw a worker walk across to go to their car. And that was all that was out there, and very bleak. And then I did talk to people that were the refugees from Coral Street. And they were really disappointed. They lost all their stuff, and where people were spread out, where I came across people, was right on River Street. Just past, almost to the corner of Highway 1, and on the other side of River Street, towards where the hot tub place is, and where Madrone is, where the Woodhouse and the launch party there. They promise they will not throw me on the ground of this launch party? I mean, like they did at the...
And this is a party for Amy Chen Mills. I think I spoke to you about this earlier, where it was being held, and you pointed out it's within two or three blocks of the Housing Matters poverty complex itself, this area where they cleared people off of Coral Street and set up fences so they could not come back. And I guess this is, you were telling me it is at the, I'm probably going to be repeating this, but that's fine, at the Woodhouse. What is Woodhouse, a restaurant?
Woodhouse Brewery. Ah. And some kids from Kansas City, Missouri, that were from the art school there, and some of them came out here with their friends and everything, and they started this brewery, Woodhouse Brewery, and it has live music, and there will be live music at this event, and Lyrical Eye is going to do some of this stuff, is rapping or whatever, you know, poetry basically, and so that's going to. That's happening there. I don't know the band, but they look, they're on the flyer. They look like a lot of boomers, so, you know, like a pretty big band, like eight people or so.
This is at 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday, right?
Tuesday. And
does it require, do you have to pay to get in, or can you get in there free?
No, they'll ask you for some money and stuff. But here's the thing about this. Typically, I have to say, when I first started communicating with Amy, her understanding of homelessness and how to deal with it and stuff was very normally, not, it was well-meaning, but really naive.
Now, we should say, I haven't mentioned this before, even though you and I have spoken about it a number of times. Amy Chen Mills is actually running for the mayorship and is essentially holding back the kind of corporate tide that Ryan Coonerty is sort of advancing in advance of or being swelled by. And I, of course, talked about Coonerty for years as being a particularly unnecessarily harsh anti-homeless character, in spite of his relationship with the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which has a reputation for being very open with the community, for providing bathrooms, for you can sit around on a couch and maybe read a book before they kick you out if you have the wrong political affiliation. I say that because I've been banned there since 1994. A long time, longer than you, I suspect.
Once, when Leon Panetta was speaking about the wider war, need for a wider war on terrorism, it was an event sponsored by Bookshop Santa Cruz at the Peace United.
But in any case, this is Amy Chen Mills, who is running against Coonerty. I have very little hope that she's going to defeat him, but the idea of mobilizing around someone who might defeat him is not necessarily a bad idea, provided you don't mistake her sense of what's appropriate for homeless people for example, your own sense of what's appropriate. I don't think you would. I don't necessarily think I would. But politicians are politicians. And if you look at the case of somebody like Micah Posner, who ran for city council, or even your old friend Chris Krohn, who's voted for lots of bad legislation in his time as well, you have to say, you know, the city council offices do something to you. It's like a machine. That's what I say anyway. I don't know what you say about this. But the reason I ask you this is because this event is coming up in 2 days, and it's an opportunity to, well, you're going to be speaking at this event, Keith?
No, I'm not speaking at it. I'm going to hand out flyers for our protest called Killer Coonerty. And that's on Saturday, the 22nd at noon outside of Bookshop Santa Cruz. So there is a rumbling in the community a bit about, some people have approached me because they're very upset about Coonerty's connection to Palantir and to his software migrating to targeting Palestinians and Gaza and so on. So there's the kind of the Gaza people have been talking to me. And then there's the people from, the fact that the people building all these high-rise buildings are the ones funding Coonerty's campaign. And then he's and the whole matrix of all these things is long-standing and not a surprise, but you know, they've been successful so far in giving the impression that the Coonerty family are these upstanding liberals. And when you look at their actual actions and stuff, they are horrendous. Because this software, for instance, is now, you know, being used to kill children in Palestine. And then,
software is that for those of us who don't
know? And that, well, it was initially a predictive policing, and it was, then it became Galactica, and it's migrated. And it's basically was a, theoretically some scientist, he was working with some people out of Southern California, I believe, and they came up with this predictive policing, and it's kind of magical. It potentially doesn't really work that well, but it's something that his brother-in-law, Michel Prati, helped finance, and they... Santa Cruz was a customer, but... Cummings would actually, introduce legislation to ban it from the city.
You're talking Justin Cummings, the former
Justin
city
Cummings,
council member.
He was on city council.
And
yeah.
Current
so
supervisor.
Anyway,
yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, that was one good thing that Justin did. So that's one thing. And then you've got the Coonerty, besides me, he's been like a mouthpiece for the most horrible policy, generally, particularly around homelessness. And, not only through what he's done in legislation as a mayor, as a supervisor, as city council, but also, just in speaking, he's just running like this whole, it's kind of a veneer of liberal Democrat type of humanness, but all pro corporate power, and he's like completely hooked up to all kinds of crazy things. You know, he has the relationships and with the Panetta family. He brags about speaking at the Aspen Institute, which is like essentially a U.S. intelligence think tank in Aspen, Colorado,
just a moment, Keith. This is Brian Coonerty, a constitutional teacher of constitutional law up at UCSC, or at least he used to be.
Yeah, I think he's still doing that, and then he's got this leadership council where I think you have to pay like $8,000 or something, but it could be as little as $5,000, and you can join his leadership council and then learn how to be a real politician. And they're basically trying to cultivate this sort of very high-tech friendly, surveillance friendly, war friendly, genocide friendly, criminalization of the homeless friendly, bunch of leaders, so that once Coonerty retires, there'll be a whole bunch of little Coonertys coming behind him. And then, And a very disturbing connection in relation to homeless people is, for instance, the largest campaign contributor, the person, Joe Lansdale, who is the founder of CIA money from Incutel and used that to start Palantir, which was done so because there's so much pushback about total information awareness by John Poindexter after 9/11. So they just made it a private thing, and then that shields them like from FOIAs and all that. Plus, they become hugely important, and that's where the software from Coonerty ends up being available for the warfare and some kind of I've done a lot of research into this. And it's like there's hints of this and that, particularly a lot of good stuff from Whitney Webb about how that software became part of Palantir's targeting software. And so then, but also with Bill Lansdale, not only contributed the maximum amount to Coonerty's boss, Matt Meehan's his name, the mayor of San Jose. I like to
call him Mayor Matt Mayhem, but that's me, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, this Joe Lansdale.
He's the San Jose mayor, for those who don't know.
Yeah, not Joe Lansdale, but the Matt.
Correct. Mayhem is the San Jose mayor.
Mayhem, yeah. And then, so Joe Lansdale, not only being a billionaire and starting, he's actually from, I think, Foster City originally. But he started the Cicero Institute. The Cicero Institute is a think tank, so to speak, and one of its it provides templates for laws, and particularly templates for cities and counties and states. It's mostly focused on state laws, really, and so, you know, Cicero Institute backed, not only participated in overturning Grants Pass, the Supreme Court ruling, was that Johnson Grants Pass?
Johnson was it was the decision that overturned Martin versus Boise and Grants Pass.
So
for those who don't know, let me interrupt you. That's the decision that back in 2016 came out of the Bell versus Boise case, which essentially said if you haven't got a place to go, the police can't write you a ticket for falling asleep or camping or sheltering yourself. Yeah, and can't take your property either. Actually, that was the Grants Pass expansion of the Martin versus Boise case. Go ahead. I just wanted to add that to those who didn't know.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So anyway, Joe Lansdale's got the Cicero Institute, and is very tight with, from all appearances, of his community, and certainly with the mayor of San Jose. And so San Jose, under the current administration, had actually shocked people when it was like in the Guardian and all these like foreign magazines, mainly English language, but it was covered here, that they were using AI to locate encampments and help go out and get the encampments, and they were very, very proud of that. And then Matt also was very, very proud of the law where, you know, it's part of that whole Democratic Party, which also is the Republican Party, but the Democrats are more known for this, of shelter. Wasn't that called? What's the slogan for that they use? Anyway.
You're talking about the fact that there's attempts to make it compulsory to accept shelter or else risk criminalization.
Yes, and what they're doing in San Jose, if you refuse shelter, then that can be, you can be prosecuted for public trespassing. I don't know how many, I did not find out how many months in jail, if there was a stipulation of a specific length of time, like 6 months or something, but it was something of that nature is likely. And so then you're just popped up back out on the street after, you know, however long you're in jail.
Do you know if they've used this in San Jose at all as an actual ordinance in practice?
Well, I don't think the 18 months has ended yet, so we don't really know.
No, has anybody been convicted of any of these or charged with any of these crimes?
Not that I don't know that. I have not seen any details about that. San Jose Searchlight, I think, is the best. I think that's the name of it. That has the best coverage of what's going on. And
what's it called again?
I think it's called San Jose Searchlight.
Santa Cruz. It's a weekly or something.
I don't know. I just find it online. I don't know how frequent it is, but they do really good work. And about this particular issue, they've been following it pretty well. So I haven't looked at it in a little while, so I don't know if they have reported on it being, you know, prosecuted. But anyway, it's a horrible idea. And in fact, the headlines when it was passed was liberal mayor, you know, passes, you know, harsh anti-homeless law. You know, even mainstream media was pointing out how you know, like, you know, so acting surprised, which they should, you know, it's just a bunch of nonsense, because, of course, liberal Democrats are some of the worst on homeless issues. And so, anyway, I point this all out because, you know, this clearly works for him in government affairs. That's his official real job.
So to reiterate, I would be suggesting, if people are interested, they might find, or they might not find, like souls at this Amy Chen Mills rally day after tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Sunday, on the, I guess it would be the 18th at 5:30 p.m. At the Woodhouse, is that right?
The Woodhouse Brewery, yep.
Woodhouse Brewery. And then the next day after that, there is the Santa Cruz Homeless Union meeting, which meets every Wednesday. Will you be holding that meeting? I know it's sometimes kind of usually people do come to it, but at other times it's scantily attended, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, we'll be having that meeting this week, but we have to come in, I think, through the kitchen.
Now, my understanding,
because of the construction.
I remember at the last meeting we were unceremoniously, shall we say, confronted with an angry Razor Ray, or Lee, as I call him at different times. Apparently he's a custodian or something in these days of the building.
Yeah, that was like a weird thing that he was all angry. Why didn't he just like say, oh man, we're trying to have people come in through, you know, he just like flew up.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
No,
something must have happened before, because when I next spoke to him, which was about 15 minutes later, he was very helpful. He let me get into the building, look for some keys I thought I'd lost, and then explained to me in some detail that he had almost broken his ankle as he stepped off the porch. So they were trying to change some of the stuff. They'd torn up the flooring.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And he said they had also, and I don't know if people are interested, if you're a Santa Cruz Union person, you might be interested in this. They had arranged to put the homeless union meeting in a building kitty corner. And he pointed it out to me, that that's where you were slated to go, and that's what upset him. So you might want to double check on that, Keith.
Well, yeah, I think Kevin got some message. See, no one ever contacted us about that, you know?
The slightest notion. I keep hearing politicians of both parties say Iran is the biggest, baddest nation today that is sponsoring terrorism all over the place. But if you ask them to name one single case, the poor sods won't have the slightest notion unless they radically change some definitions. But if we're talking about how it's generally meant, civilians targeted in a mass casualty event, then Iran is a victim of terrorism, and in some kind of twist of fate, it was Iran-backed militias that defeated Islamic State. Now ISIS carried out lots of attacks on civilians, including a whole lot of attacks on Iranians. So Iran made a quiet alliance with the US to spend years cleaning up America's mess, because Iran is a victim of terrorism, and in some kind of twist of fate, it was Iran-backed militias that defeated Islamic State. Fought against other things too, like the US being in Iraq, it's true. They were against an occupation, which is an instance not of terrorism, but of resistance. And now the USA engages in a terror war, killing thousands of civilians, who knows what for? A master plan, a whim, a distraction, Western propaganda, call it kinetic action. But Iran is a victim of terrorism.
Yeah, that was another one by Itsuno and David Rovix. Iran-backed militia.
Let me get into the building, look for some keys I thought I'd lost, and then explain to me in some detail that he had almost broken his ankle as he stepped off the porch, so they were trying to change some of the stuff. They'd torn up the flooring.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And he said they had also, and I don't know if people are interested, if you're a Santa Cruz Union person, you might be interested in this. They had arranged to put the homeless union meeting in a building kitty corner. And he pointed it out to me. He said, that's where you were slated to go, and that's what upset him. So you might want to double-check on that, Keith.
Well, yeah, I think Kevin got some message. See, no one ever contacted us about that, you know? And nobody greeted us out in front to say. And I was talking to, I heard his name, the deacon of the church. We're just hanging out there talking. And he didn't know what, and, you know, he was kind of surprised that Lee was all upset.
Well, for those who are interested, the Santa Cruz Homie Humor is still meeting at the Red Church, and I guess we'll have signs posted, or at least there'll be some way of knowing which of the buildings to go to, because it's going to be one of the back buildings. It's not the front building that we used to go to get the meals, headed by Joel Miller, and
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, well, I'll find out I'll go look for Lee when I get there.
And that's at 3:30 every Wednesday, and I guess after that, if you really haven't had enough, you can come to the Huff meeting at the back area of the Maw at Abbott Square in the open area where we meet at 1:30, from 1:30 to 3:30. And then, of course, Food Now Bomb shows up every weekend from 12 to 3, or even you can probably get in a little bit before then and even a little bit.
Yeah, people like sort of gather. You know, there's actually people waiting for us when we get there.
And you have threatened to do some tabling, but although that's dependent on your physical health at the moment, as I understand it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I did table all day today down by the Palomar because of the Palomar crisis that's brewing.
Let's talk about that. What is the Palomar crisis? You're talking about a hotel downtown.
Well, you know, Merv will actually know all the details about it, but the basic thing is essentially there became retaliation against the tenants when it looked like they were going to organize, and so there's this $1 million was. At 3% interest, so it's lent to the Palomar Inn to keep the rents at the way they were, because many, many people in there, if the rent went up as much as they claimed it was going to go up,
which was how much, do we know?
I don't. It was kind of, that's the weird thing about this, is it kind of varied from every unit. And this is part of their strategy. So you have some of the people, even in the old system, would have, you know, fared well, and then a lot of the people would just be evicted. And then, then they got this money from the city to offset that. But then for whatever reason, now that is out the window, and it's not going to help these people. And now it's back to the same situation where the people will be unable to afford to live there that are living there, and they will be forced out onto the street. But some people will be, if they'll still be allowed to be there, then because their wages relative to what the rent will be, so they're using that as a divide and conquer strategy, and they're also very much intimidating all the tenants into not organizing.
How many people are affected by this increase, would you estimate?
I have a sense it's roughly 50 people.
Do you have any sense of what the general rise in the rent is likely to be and what the eviction date is? I don't know is an acceptable answer. I don't know.
A lot of stuff is like real sketchy, probably on purpose, and also there's so many details to this that Marv has told me that it's super complicated. And they're trying to get an email campaign to the city. They're trying to have the city attorney tell the landlord that they can't raise the rent because of this offer of $1 million. So anyway, it's like this whole, and this landlord is owns property all over America. And
name of the landlord?
I don't remember the name of the landlord. And she's out of another. She's not from around here. I don't remember, but it's definitely another state.
Eviction date.
And there's no real clear eviction date. I guess what will happen is that once they can't pay the whole rent, see, it's going to be random like that, right? So there'll be like some people will be able to pay the rent because there wasn't an adjustment because the rent going up and the way their HUD funding is made it possible to stay there. But then other people won't be able to. So they'll be the first month, they just won't have enough to pay the rent.
What's your experience? You said you were there for a number of hours in front of the Palomar on Pacific Avenue tabling?
Yeah, I was there from...
What did you learn, if anything? What was your experience there?
Well, it was really fascinating. The people that... Travis was the main occupant of the Palomar that hung out with me. And he was real helpful, so that was really good. And then, he's such a good guy. And and I hope that doesn't damage his ability to stay in the Palomar. But anyway, people from the Palomar waved. But there was a lot of good, the whole day was very interesting. And, it was like, some people, like, a wedding dress came by because he was going to a concert here. But I haven't seen him in years. He has a memoir out himself, you know. So that was really wonderful to see him. And his cover of his book, of his memoir, is of him being arrested in a wedding dress. It's like, really funny. By I think the Berkeley cops, and I think probably around People's Park issue. It was really, really nice cover.
Did you have any conversations with the residents there?
Not much, no. I did run, I brought like four copies of Soup Street,
which is your book, your recent book.
My memoir, and yeah, people sold every copy, I met like people I hadn't seen in years. It was really beautiful.
Now, how long were you there for?
From noon to about 7, I would say.
And do you intend to repeat this in the days ahead?
I might do this on the actual Saturday of the protest. I might table it that.
Because you're already planning on Saturday. That's next Saturday, the 22nd, to be in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which is about it's pretty near the Palomar, right?
It's not that far down. That's one of the things I was trying to get. I was handing out a lot of flyers for that protest.
And that's going to be that's going to start at noon and go until when?
I don't know, probably a couple of hours. Depends on how burned out we are. We got to figure out at the meeting this Wednesday. We're going to a little more tea. I hope I can be at that meeting. I have to look at my schedule.
You're talking about the Santa Cruz Homeless Union meeting, starting at 3:30, and
I have so many doctors
and the red shirts,
stuff like that. It's insane. And there's a possibility. I can't make that. I'll get the key to somebody. But the so anyway, that protest is on the 22nd. That should be pretty fun. And then, what else is going down? That's really just tragic the whole way, the treating of homeless people, because, they were all scattered like down on Fulker Street under the pedestrian bridge. People were having to find places up in the, you know, behind the tannery. It's just like, this doesn't really help anybody. And it's making it so hard for us to find. It's like we used to come down Coral Street, we could hand out water and food and stuff and help a lot of people. Now that's like, you know, now these people are all spread to the wind. And,
well, I think that's the point. They want to break up homeless communities and drive the kind of support that may come from within the community and from outside, provided people know where they are, and of course drive them outside the city limits and perhaps outside the county limits.
Yeah. Well, let's see. But there's a person that had attended a meeting of Ryan Coonerty and Donna Myers, when Myers was the mayor of Santa Cruz, he was the board of supervisors, had discussed sending homeless people to Camp Roberts, which is a 2-hour drive south, but right off of 101 near San Miguel, and I think it's in Monterey County. And it's run by the California National Guard, military camp. And I remember as a kid, when you go down 101, that I would be like amazed at how fast the army tanks would go. They'd go parallel to the highway, you know, and they'd be jumping over these hills and stuff. I go, wow, that's really crazy. But anyway, they'd have barracks there and stuff, but San Miguel is like maybe 10 miles away, and that hardly has any stores in it.
Now, there is a rally today, if we're talking about Sunday, the 16th, against the Flox cameras. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's coming up.
Yeah. I didn't know what the time of it is. But
I believe it's at noon. According to the Santa Cruz Urinal, which they call the Sentinel, it is it's at the county governmental building, which I assume they mean the courthouse, but I think that's what they mean. Because strangely enough, in the story, which is mentioned in Tuesday's Sentinel, they do not give you the normal thing where they tell you where to go and when to go, although it is buried in the story, which talks about this being sort of the flagship for attacks on Flox cameras. I don't know, maybe it's even nationwide, but it's at least statewide. So
it's a nationwide action. Yeah, I've been following that on social media. And it is a very peculiar thing that the article, because I only glanced at the article, and I don't see what the time of this event is.
Well, no, I think it's according to this. It's it's on page 3, anti-flock rally planned, and it's
The whole thing was
funny. Hold a rally at the governmental center on Sunday. No, it doesn't. You're right. It doesn't say what time it is. I'm just assuming because, you know, your rally is at noon. The Killer Coonerty rally for next Saturday on the 22nd is at noon. But, you know, there. I guess it could be.
Well, you know, there's probably like a nationwide Flock website. Here, let me look that up. Well, yeah, because I'm sure there is something like that. Because it's a whole big trip, you know. Let's see here. Flock protest. What a day, man.
So you apparently held out for a number of hours down there with...
I really had a good time. Here's a really cool thing I don't know if it's cool. It was kind of cool. I was just talking frankly to these people, and it turned out they were MAGA people, but they really, they like... thought that the whole thing of food, not bombs. And one of the things they really thought was, one guy was a doctor. He said, "It's like so cool. You just like talk to us, you know, like we're regular people, you know." Whereas, that even though you have a different idea of, it's really enjoyable talking to you, and it's not.
Well, you know, there's a lot. There's been some talk for a long time about some, understanding the real opposition combat, the real enemy, if you will, is the government, which is a combination of liberal mythology and right-wing militarism, and which is, it doesn't please anybody at either end of the political spectrum, if you follow what I mean.
Right.
And of course, it
there's a bunch of things like this that are like the AI data center things, and that's happening. I'm not finding. There's all this damn. Well, I need to find out. Fuck camera, the senators. That's one problem.
I did look up. I couldn't find the time for the Amy Chin rally.
That was 5:30. Okay, it is saying here that it's going to be a Sunday at noon.
So it is at noon. Okay, maybe.
Yeah. So that's really cool. So.
Well, listen, let's leave it there. Let me put it this way. Let me give you the last word, and I'll press on with this so I can get this show put to bed and everybody can hear what you have to say.
Okay, very good. Well, anyway, please come to that protest. And it's a lot of crazy things going on, that's for sure. And hope, I think, though, that I get this energy from people who did stop by and talk, no matter what their sort of political trip was. That people are much kinder. I have like a blog than it's presented in society. The media makes it out like the Trumpers are terrible, and then the but people are people, and they really want to help one another out. And this whole thing is just being amplified intentionally by the intelligence community to divide us. But I think people are much more compassionate than the media and the authorities are pushing. And so hopefully that will mean something as the economy starts to crash. I think it's amazing that it's not that the Strait of Hormuz and the Red Sea being shut down, that it's not like more intense. But apparently there's going to be an end to the strategic oil reserve, and that could happen very soon, and other such things. At some point, it's going to seem like it will be very evident that this has been an economic disaster, and that we're heading into a Great Depression. And this is, it's amazing it's all held on this long.
Yeah, so say the libertarian and left pundits. It's hard to tell. It's hard to make a real judgment, because you really have to, I guess, get deep into the research of this and consider different aspects. But I tend to, I tend to favor those sources, as I suspect you do too.
Well, it just seems like logical that there's no oil, that and all these other commodities.
Yeah, fertilizer and so forth, sure.
That it would result in there being economic problems, How can you take 20% of the oil off the market?
On the other hand, when people have been living on illusions for a long period of time, the implication is you can continue to feed them illusions. You continue to feed us illusions, and we'll continue to think we're being fed. So,
it's very interesting. Well, hopefully something will happen that's positive someday.
Last word to you, Keith.
Okay, foodnotbombs.net. Check it out. That's where you can get a copy of, there's a PDF, even if you can't buy it, of Soup Street, a memoir of Food Not Bombs co-founder Keith McHenry.
I heard of him.
And people, get back to me as to if you like the book.
I've been reading parts of it, and I will talk to you more about that when I'm well guarded, so that I don't get assaulted by your troops, Keith.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And here's another number by Itsuno and David Rovix. The last one was called Iran-Backed Militias, in case I didn't mention it. This one is called Starving Us for Liberty.
It's been 3 months since the blockade was imposed on the island. With no fuel, the world afraid to try to sell any to them. No fuel to run the hospitals for electrical stations. No fuel to run the water pumps. Blackouts across the nation. To get at the government, are you starving us for liberty? Or is it for democracy? Are you killing us in order to make us free? What is it that they want? The question just reverberates. What drives the leaders of this country? The United States. Why do they think the world is all part of their domain? Will we ever throw off the shackles of the American ring? Are you starving us for liberty? Or is it
And here's a rather grim story from the San Francisco Chronicle. It's called Police Used Excessive Force in 24 Mistaken Traffic Stop. And it's in the August 12th issue, August 12th, 2026, by Abigail Von Neely. Two San Francisco police officers smashed a car window and pulled the driver to the street during a mistaken July 2024 traffic stop. The city's police watchdog agency found. The officer's unreasonable and excessive use of force, apparently the words from the police watchdog agency, violated multiple police policies, the San Francisco Department of Police Accountability wrote in a February report released by the Public Defender's Office on Monday. The officers were following 48-year-old Matthew Ludwig late on the 4th of July in 2024, because they believed the Honda Accord he drove was stolen. Only later did they realize they had entered the wrong license plate number into their system, the agency found. A complaint filed in 2025 by the San Francisco Public Defender's Officer named the officers as Jonathan Zapita and Vinaya Govindabai. A spokesperson for the police department declined to comment, and it is unclear if the officers have been disciplined. The district attorney's office did not respond to a request for comment, and the city attorney's office declined to comment. Ludwig came to a stop at a red light near O'Farrell and Larkin Streets. One officer ran up to the Honda, smashed the driver's side window of his baton, and dragged Ludwig out of the car, body-worn camera footage showed. The officer repeatedly yelled for Ludwig, whose left arm was pinned behind him, to put his hands behind his back. The officer's partner pinned Ludwig's legs to the ground, then pepper-sprayed him in the face. From inches away, the watchdog agency found. "Why are you doing this to me?" Ludwig is heard saying. "I didn't do anything wrong." Later, Ludwig is seen lying on the sidewalk while an officer trickles water on his face. "I can't breathe," he repeats. Per police policy, suspects are supposed to be sprayed from a minimum of 4.5 feet away. The watchdog agency wrote, "Force is only to be used when someone resists arrest." Ludwig, the agency said, did not. The officers said they watched Ludwig speed and run multiple red lights and cited him for reckless driving. They purportedly told the sergeant that Ludwig had, quote, evaded a traffic stop. But the officers never turned on their lights or sirens to signal for Ludwig to pull over. Later, the agency wrote, the officers admitted never attempting a traffic stop of the driver. The agency's report found that Ludwig's behavior did not support a citation for reckless driving. Police realized that they'd mistakenly entered Ludwig's license plate after handcuffing him. The public defender's office. Defender's office wrote in their 2025 complaint. Ludwig was booked into jail and charged with reckless driving and resisting arrest. Prosecutors dropped the case after Ludwig died in September 2025, according to the public defender's office. The officer's warrior-like mentality during Ludwig's arrest was, quote, an incredible overreaction, unquote, said Brian Cox, manager of the Public Defender's Integrity Unit. Ludwig's Honda was towed, then sold in a city auction, his attorney Brandon Coleman said. He was unable to afford the fee to recover it from the lot. The recreational vehicle Ludwig shared with the girlfriend was towed a few days later. Coleman added in a statement, he told me that he felt like this world lacked compassion for human life, and that he had never been given a fair chance in life. That's police used excessive force in 24 mistaken traffic stop by Abigail Van Neely, San Francisco Chronicle, August 12, 2026. But have no fear. Here's another article from the August 10th San Francisco Chronicle, headlined, ICE Every Field Officer to Get Body Camera. Washington. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement said Saturday it expects every officer and agent in the field to be equipped with a body camera by the end of August, a rapid expansion that could provide an unprecedented visual record of the federal government's immigration enforcement operation. But whether the public will get to see that footage remains largely up to ICE. The agency defended its body-worn camera policy amid questions about provisions allowing ICE leadership to withhold or infinitely delay footage after serious injuries or deaths in custody. Acting Director David G. Vellanturella said the restrictions are intended to protect investigations and privacy, and are consistent with federal law and policies at other federal law enforcement agencies. Nothing to see here. Keep moving along. Everything's okay. That's my comment. Venturella's statement came in response to an AP report on ICE policy, including a provision calling for the expedited release of footage after a serious injury or death in custody when doing so is determined to be in the, quote, best interests of the agency. Venturella said the AP, quote, mischaracterized the policy by conflating that provision with ICE's broader authority to release body camera footage. He said the policy clarifies footage should not be released when doing so would compromise investigations or privacy. The AP report did not say the provision governs every release of body camera footage. It focused on ICE's policy for relaxing footage after some of the most consequential encounters with the public, those involved actions involving serious injury or death. The AP sought comment from ICE before its initial story on Friday. The agency provided partial responses without addressing the provision that footage would be released when in its, quote, best interest, unquote. ICE has been under heightened scrutiny since the fatal shooting in July of a 25-year-old motorist in Maine by an ICE officer with a history of violent behavior. Days earlier, another ICE officer shot and killed a Houston home builder driving to work. Neither shooting was recorded with body cameras. Venturella said ICE was, quote, committed to transparency and accountability and was, quote, on track to equip every officer and agent in the field with body-worn cameras by the end of August, unquote. The AP quoted Christopher Schneider, a sociology professor at Brandon University in Canada, who said selective releases are routine in some law enforcement agencies, but usually not so clearly contemplated in policy. In some ways, ICE is saying the quiet part out loud. The story noted ICE's sister agency, Customs and Border Protection, has not released footage of the fatal shooting of Alex Preti in Minneapolis. CBP Commissioner Rodney Scott told investigators that it was part of an investigation and would be made public, quote, when it's appropriate. And that's ICE, every field officer to get body camera. You just can't see the footage. On the Monday, August 10th, 2026 issue of the San Francisco Chronicle, an AP story. Even the AP apparently begins to smell the dead fish. And here's another song. Again, Itsuno and David Rubix, called From 1953 to the Present Day.
America should die. What got them so angry? If you wonder why, the answer is plain. Thanks to the kids who unshredded the papers, that's what they did in the U.S. Embassy, where the decades went when the CIA overthrew their government, overthrew the man popularly elected, replaced with the dictator they selected. For 26 years, ruled by foreign corporations and secret police to control the nation, keep the people in line, maintain docility through the iron fist of prison and brutality. The ruling family got rich while most were poor. They robbed the country, put the money offshore, overthrew the Shah. Crowds weren't related until a few months later Iran was invaded. Living and dying under the thumb of the USA. About when the empire struck back in the form of Saddam's army, Iraq, the chemical weapons and their tanks decimating the soldiers' ranks in this endless 8-year bloodbath. Just a different
different way to bring on the imperial wrath you get when you declared you're free of the USA's hegemony. Made such a mess of the region that the black flags of ISIS had become legion. They called them Iranian proxy militias, mate. Those are them that defeated Islamic State, led by Soleimani, who was thanked by a missile that landed from up in the sky. It seems if they can't run Iran, they want to be sure no one else can. Like it never was, acting like an empire does, when pretense of playing by rules of any kind have been burned like bridges left behind in the rest of the world. If you can't afford to live in the world we're speeding toward, too bad for you if your life is wrecked by this empire building project.
So now I'm going to play some reports from Krill and Adrian, who were either down at the last sweep on Monday, which was the 17th, which came on the heels of one on the 13th and another on the 10th. But it looks like there may not be any sweeps for a while, because what they're doing is they put up fences along the sidewalk, as you heard described by Keith McHenry in the earlier interview. I saw those myself, which prohibit them, as well as signs saying you'll be arrested if you block this pathway in any way. It's a way of clearing out the area, it appears to be. Indeed, fences have appeared all over town in previous encampment areas that people used, without, of course, providing any real other encampment areas for people to go to. So this first interview is with Krill, who was there at the very last sweep, probably the last one that's going to happen on Coral Street, because the police department is taking no chances, or maybe it's housing or funding matters, as I like to call them. They call themselves housing matters. Not to make sure that the riffraff are kept away from their pristine project, which seems to have been the whole point of their cutting off services on April 1st, at all to monetize the situation more effectively, to serve a small, more elite group, or at least to create a large body of so-called social workers who are at least getting some kind of salary, while the top cats of that particular place are getting six-digit salaries. Pretty nasty stuff. Here's some of these interviews. This one with Krill, we'll begin with. He wasn't there, but he came back afterward, had conversations with people who were, and gave this account.
Wow. Have you been down there, I take it?
Yes. Yeah, I was down there yesterday evening, afternoon.
And were people still camped there?
So the street was closed for most of the afternoon because the city workers were installing the fences. So nobody had really come back yet.
So Krill is speaking, I believe, on the 11th, Tuesday the 11th, but he's referring about to the last sweep that happened the day before on the 10th.
Are there barriers at both ends of the street, or is it?
No, the street is open, but the actual sidewalk portions are fenced off. In other words, there's a fence between the sidewalk and the street on one side. And some other areas have been closed off too. Like there were gaps and fences across the street where people would camp, and those have been sealed.
This is on Coral Street?
Yes. There's basically there's significantly less area for people to set up fence, and there's signs hanging on the fence saying going past the fence fire can get you a citation under 13, trying to remember, 13 something 11. It's the section about parks and recreation property access hours.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's the response been of folks who've been staying there for this, you know?
The few I've talked to say some of them are considering leaving for good. Some are concerned there's not going to be enough space for everybody. I don't think people have had time to formulate a real plan of action yet. At that time, I had to go past there quickly this morning because I was late for lunch. So I saw that there were a few people at the Lion Kiln end of the street. On the River Street end, the sidewalk where people usually set up tents has been fully closed off. And across the street from that, the sidewalk is still open, so you can access Housing Matters, but it's narrow because it's enclosed by like a fenced off area. So setting up a tent there would completely block traffic, mm-hmm. and probably people wouldn't be able to access their own tents. Mm-hmm. Which leaves the River Street part of Coral with pretty much nowhere to camp. The Lion Kiln itself seems to be still unfenced, the Granite Rock property. So I'm kind of expecting a lot of people to populate that area. And there's some sections of the...
Have you been up there yet?
Only yesterday when nobody was really there. So it's a crazy situation. I mean, people have told me that, you know, this is a repeating pattern in Santa Cruz where they still going to start cracking down and push everybody out.
Who has told you this?
Oh, I don't want to name names.
I mean, what kind of people have told you this?
People who have been here longer than I have and seen it happen. And have done activism themselves.
But no official word from any police, politicians or non-profit people?
All I know is the police told people they would be arrested if they came back across the street and tried to set up again.
Police or the signs they posted?
Police. But I think they were distorting the truth a little bit because I don't know what cause they have to immediately make arrest if someone tried to set up again.
Are there postings now on any tents that have been set up for a new Thursday or other date of eviction?
I intend to check that later today.
Okay.
But there weren't any tents last time I was actually there.
Today is the shitty council meeting. You probably know about that, right?
Yes, and I'm going to miss it. It's an appointment.
Yeah, yet I'm missing it too. Sean Doherty was going to speak at it. However, his babysitter took a powder or had to cancel, and so he's not. I think he spoke yesterday with police auditor and the folks you spoke to.
or maybe it was the police department. I'm not sure. He didn't interview.
I think it was the auditor.
Huh? You think it was the auditor?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Any news on that?
Let's see. He did give me a bit of a report. Let me check.
Sounds like the wind is blowing in your neck. You still with me?
I texted you what you said. So, easier for me than reading out loud right now.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I'm walking to the library, so I just copy-pasted you what Sean wrote in the sweep support signal.
Okay, are you intending to hit the city council?
No, I just need to get some water, use the bathroom, and go to my appointment.
Gotcha. any report on Monday and how that went?
You mean yesterday?
I guess I do, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, well, the sweep happened, and I don't remember if they generated a report on it.
Did he send it to you? Or?
I don't remember if he wrote one. And let's see.
You know, if anything new was posted on any tents, or there were any tents after that?
Not aware, because, again, the sweep happened, and after the sweep, they kept the street closed, taped off for a defense installation most of the day. So, since the sweep, there haven't really been tents up.
And these are fences that are more than temporary meshing?
They're like segments of chicken wire, I guess you call it.
Mm-hmm.
They stand up on their own, linked together to form a fence.
Gotcha. Do we know how many people attended the Monday sweeps? That is to say, the volunteers?
I'm honestly having a hard time remembering who was there, but I think Adrian and someone else did attend, yeah. He probably helped out.
There was about two people?
Probably, yeah.
I got you. I mean, I did reach I reached Adrian's machine. I haven't reached him. How's he doing?
I think he's doing good. Let's see, what's he been up to? He was talking to the police auditor yesterday and had some other tests. But I think he's doing okay.
He talked to the police. Who's he was this?
Yeah. They weren't much help in his conversation.
Figured.
They basically said you would have to file individual complaints with the police department for every instance of problems.
Was this an official meeting he had with them, or was this casual conversation?
It was an arranged meeting.
An arranged meeting, you say?
Yeah, well, I think he met the auditor at the city council, and they set up a meeting.
Interesting. Do you know, is he going to the city council meeting today?
I don't think so. I don't know. I haven't heard a lot from him. I think he's just busy. Yeah. I've been really focused on the Samantha case. So I've been kind of not paying attention to anything else.
Have you been able to reach her?
Not yet. I did. I was finally yesterday able to leave a message at the shelter. Someone told me Luke Johnson works there, and I tried to call him 3 times, and he didn't answer. So finally, I just showed up at the fence, at the locked gate, waved down the janitor, and Luke Johnson came out and said he would pass along my message on the condition that Samantha is in fact living there, which he would not disclose.
Luke Johnson is a worker or a resident?
Worker. He's like Housing Matters Outreach Specialist, or he seems to be one of the people running the Live Oak Landing Shelter.
And he said that Samantha was or wasn't living there?
He said he could not disclose that, but if she was, he would pass along my message. And so I left my phone number.
This was yesterday?
Yes. So I'm waiting on a call from Samantha, hopefully.
You've tried reaching her by phone?
She told me her phone was stolen, so I don't have a phone number for her, and I lost the contact info she gave me for the shelter. So,
I think it happens,
Yeah, it's so rough.
Mm-hmm. Do you have Johnson's number, by the way?
Luke Johnson? Yeah.
Is it easily accessible for you?
Sure.
You want to text me? You can text it to me or give it to me if you want.
Okay, sure. I can do that. He didn't answer any of my 3 phone calls, but I'll give it to you. I got the number. Someone told me he worked there and that I could get the number from the guard post at Housing Matters on Coral Street. And it appears the guard post has business cards for many Housing Matters employees. So you can get their numbers there.
Mm. Oh, yeah. But so far that hasn't been successful. You had to actually foot it over there to deal with it.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Well, good for you.
He has an answering machine. I could have lost the message, I suppose.
Another, you mean a fourth message?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I hope you don't exhaust yourself doing all this shit. Is there anything you'd like to tell the city council in the event that I get it together to phone in a comment? I don't know if I'm going to or not.
I was honestly wanting to ask a very short and sweet question, which is, am I understanding correctly that, because by Santa Cruz Municipal Code, the only way I can understand what's happening on Coral Street is that the city manager has assigned the sidewalk to the Parks and Recreation Department.
And back to Kirill in a moment, but here's a song called The Number One Sponsor of Terror on the Planet, and it's another Sumo Aerobics special.
Accusations being thrown around, it's correct, or the vision is lies. a bounder, freedom fighter is my criminal. Transparent logic or subliminal. But when it comes to the USA, no competition in the globe today. The cartel commanded by the dawn, terrorizing the world till it's gone. And mass graves.
And that one was the number one sponsor of terror on the planet, as I may have mentioned before. Well, got the military bases, so we got the means to do the terror until, of course, the world starts to fight back. Back to Krill and the Coral Street folks who are being driven away.
Yeah. But so far that hasn't been successful. You had to actually put it over there to deal with it.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Well, good for you.
As an answering machine, I could have lost a message, I suppose.
Another, you mean a fourth message?
Yeah.
Well, I hope you don't exhaust yourself doing all this shit. Is there anything you'd like to tell the shitty council in the event that I get it together to phone in a comment? I don't know if I'm going to or not.
I was honestly wanting to ask a very short and sweet question, which is, am I understanding correctly that, because by Santa Cruz Municipal Code, the only way I can understand what's happening on Coral Street is that the city manager has assigned the sidewalk to the Parks and Recreation Department, which sounds bizarre on the face of it, so I don't know if I'm interpreting that correctly.
Currently in the code section of this Santa Cruz Municipal Code 13 section, it used to state that there are these huge areas that the Parks and Rec controls, and the city manager can assign additional areas to them. It was passed, it seems to me, like, I don't know, we'll call it a sneak pass. It probably went through city council, but it was, I don't recall being able to debate it in any way. It was in It was about 15 years ago. So it could be true, but it doesn't in any way justify it. You know, so that's my understanding, likely understanding of the technical part of it. That section 13 is a significant part of the whole attack on homeless people. You look it over, it along with the downtown ordinances and with 6.36 and the state penal code around lodging. Those are the main pretexts that they're using, as far as it would be my at least momentary guess now.
That makes sense. I actually, while looking it up, I found something you wrote in 2006 about that. Was a really interesting read.
Good. I got a lot of shit down there, which sometimes it's useful, at least historically. I don't know. You have to then update it and find out what the fuck they're doing in the last 20 years. So it's, you know, pain in the ass. Are you headed for the surgery or anything, or is that in none of my business?
Just an appointment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let me know if I should send you a get well card.
Yeah. I think staying up late's affecting me a bit. Slow day, but.
Well, you probably got somewhat rocky accommodations at night, right?
It's not that bad. But yeah, if I had a chance to go to state council, I would literally ask. Am I understanding this correctly, that you've assigned portions of the sidewalk on Coral Street to the Parks and Recreation Department?
Yeah, they wouldn't have to. He would do it unilaterally, would be my thought. But yeah, I guess I could put it, if I were talking to them, have portions of the sidewalk. I could address that to the city manager, who's also sitting up there, you know, looking.
Yeah, but by the law I read, the city manager would be the one assigning it to the Parks and Rec Department, so he would be the person to ask.
And if so, what will be the next question you would ask?
I think I'd leave it at that, because it's bizarre enough on its own that Parks and Rec is in charge of a sidewalk with nothing on it except concrete.
Well, flowers may burst through the concrete.
Yeah, so
for all of Santa Cruz's streets, one way or another.
I would really not even inject any opinions into that question.
Of course, of course. All right. I mean, I find it's more useful getting this information from you. It's more worth my time than trying to hang onto the phone and get to them. But we'll see if I feel like it. They start at 2:00. So in case you scream at them, feel free to. All right. Actually, you speak very, very coherently when you do. So.
Last time I spoke is. Very high adrenaline, so it stresses me out quite a lot. I think I've got other things to put my energy stored on. So.
Definitely don't get a stroke going there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let me know if you see new notices appearing. I'll try to give Adrian a call, see what he's learned, if he's reachable. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll do. And Dylan's still trying to. Well, Dylan wanted to. Stop by and observe the Thursday sweeps. I've been keeping him in touch.
Do you have a phone contact number for Dylan?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I do.
Give it to me if you want. I've corresponded with him by email, and I may have spoken to him. That would have been back in 2018, but he'll probably know who I am. He can always choose to talk or not to talk, as the case may be.
And 2 days later, I spoke, or maybe it was the next day, I spoke with Adrian, and he gave me an account of his recollection, because he was actually at the Monday, August 10th sweep, the last sweep that, as far as we know up to now, that has happened. And there have been no further postings put up announcing sweeps, because the postings he put up essentially announce a continuous sweep. If they enter the area, it's considered blocking the way, and therefore it essentially makes it a completely forbidden zone. Anyway, here's some of that conversation with Adrian, who is another activist who along with Kirill have really led the charge on documenting and assisting people being driven away by police who are providing no place to go, but actually simply sending the message, get the fuck out of town.
It's August 12th, 2026, and I'm here at the end of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union meeting outside the Calvary Episcopal Church talking with
Adrian.
And Adrian, you've been doing, sweep support work down on Coral Street. In fact, you were there day before yesterday for the Monday sweep. That had we were concerned that the sweeps were becoming more frequent.
Yes.
And it seemed that that was an understatement.
For sure. Yeah.
So why was that an understatement? Why is it fair for me to say that?
I was there for maybe an hour earlier and two cops rolled past for no reason. They fenced off one side of the street so that people couldn't camp there, and seems like they've been threatening people with tickets or arrest.
Bring a box of bread out?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
It's in the car.
Oh, okay, good.
Valid. Yeah, I brought that.
All right. Got it for.
Valid. They fenced off one side of the street, and then on the other side of the street, they're apparently threatening people to keep it moving, to not camp there, even though a lot of people have been living there for almost a year, and beyond that, too, after the last time they did this, because this allegedly has happened the last 2 years, where they shut down the street and say you can't come back, and then a month later they stop enforcing it and people come back. But the police presence is really heavy down there. They're rolling by all the time, just intimidating.
Now, on this particular occasion, Monday, you showed up about what time?
Around 7:30.
And how many of your Confederates in crime were there?
No crimes were committed, but I was there with another comrade, I suppose.
Uh-huh. And what was your purpose in being there, and what did you do?
We were there to document and also to help people carry their belongings if they couldn't carry them themselves.
How many people did you find down there, would you estimate?
When I got there was probably about 30 to 50 people hanging around, packing their things up.
And their tents, at least I was told in an email, had been posted with a notice that on Thursday night of the previous week or Friday, that there was to be a sweep and they were to vacate because of what did the notice say? Do you remember?
I believe it was Friday, and it varies area by area, but usually it's something along the lines of camping here for more than certain number of hours, blocking the sidewalk, etc.
I think it said an encampment can't be in place for any more than 96 hours or some such thing, based upon a city code, is what I vaguely remember deciphering it as when I sort of peered into the very small print. It was in relatively small print. So what kind of experience did you have down there as you were? Were you able to help people?
We were able to help a couple people with certain larger items and also just like large amounts of items.
Did you see anyone from Funding Matters, as I call Housing Matters, offering people some alternative to the tents and the rather wretched conditions that are on the sidewalk, but even more wretched conditions of having to move all their stuff somewhere and not know if they'd be moved again, not know if they could come back, and so forth?
Housing Matters really only offers sometimes coffee and usually trash bags on sweep days. The city outreach coordinators were particularly unhelpful, though they always are, just sort of hanging around, not doing much, if anything, just trying to get people to go to shelter, whether they want it or not.
How many of them were there?
Three of the outreach coordinators.
Did you know them by name?
I know one of them is Jeremy Leonard, and one of them is named Jen. I forgot the third's name.
And did you hear any conversations they had with people living there or people who were there in any way?
Not in this particular case. I remember from a comrade that Jeremy Leonard supposedly told her to be ashamed of herself for helping the houseless people in the way that he didn't want us to be helping people. Saying something like enabling or whatever. People like to say you shouldn't help homeless people. But I've also heard conversations between them and campers in the past that were just like, either they couldn't help them, or they were trying to get them into a shelter that they didn't want to go into, or they wanted them to go to rehab before they went into a shelter, and just sort of being essentially the gatekeepers of all things shelter related, and not really, and they're very petty people. Like, you piss them off once, they have a vendetta against you for life.
Are you on bad terms with these people?
Oh, very.
And how did that happen to a man as mild-mannered as yourself?
Oh, multiple ways. They've often spoken over me, interrupted me while I'm talking to someone, offered, or I guess coerced people into shelters or rehabs that they didn't want while I was standing there observing. More recently, Jeremy Leonard thought it necessary to call my boss on me, to tattletale on my behavior, whatever that behavior is. Not that he got anything done by doing that. I think it was a stupid thing to do and kind of rude, but also just being buddy-buddy with the cops. I don't fuck with people who are buddy-buddy with cops.
So, would it be difficult for you if I asked you what kind of work you are doing, what kind of job you have?
Yes, that would be difficult.
Okay. But you are regularly employed, not some kind of a trashy bum.
Sure.
I want to make sure I'm not wasting my time with the wrong kind of person, you understand?
Oh, of course, of course. Can't be with those jobless hooligans.
Lower types. They're all nothing personal against them, of course. Bigotry is the furthest thing from my mind. What happened subsequent to... Well, how long did this eviction process take place, or when did the police arrive, I guess I should ask you?
They arrived around 9 a.m., and they had the street locked down the whole day.
And by locked down, you mean what, taped off?
Taped off, copped up.
How many cops were involved in this?
Originally, at least 5, I want to say, and they kind of dwindled down to maybe 2 or 3 by the end of it.
Did you have any names of these police officers?
I remember Rock was standing guard like a good guard dog, or guard pig, I suppose. I don't remember any of the others from that day. I assume Salazar was probably there. I don't remember any others.
How long did you stay?
I stayed until about 11 o'clock. I had somewhere to be at noon.
What were you doing there? I mean... How many people did you help move? Let me ask you that.
I think 4. We took about, like, full carloads of things. I think we took about 5 or 6 full carloads of belongings.
Did the people move to a single location, or was it sort of various spots?
No, they spread out, which creates an issue of community and resources. When houseless people are in camps, they have community, and they have all of the resources they need from each other, and they're able to help each other out. Like, someone has extra of something, can help someone out. But when we scatter people, it creates this isolation that can lead to just not good consequences. Death, isolation, poor health.
Overdose,
yep. No one around in Narcan yet if you're all spread out.
So, continuing... if you came at 7:30 and left at 11, that's 3.5 hours.
Yes, it is.
And did you have many conversations with the folks that you were helping?
I did. I spoke to one friend for a decent amount of time, talking about next steps, planning what to do. Cops didn't tell anyone that they weren't going to be allowed back on the street. They just said, get out, and kept the street locked down and fenced it up. I didn't know until someone had messaged me saying that someone said that they threatened to arrest people if they went back and camped. But they didn't say that before people left. They said that as people were trying to return, allegedly.
Well, at what point did you learn this? About what time of day?
Maybe noon or 1 p.m.
And did anyone try to come back to remove more of their stuff after the area was taped off, and how were they treated if they did?
I'm trying to remember. I think I was one of, if not the only person that tried to go back that day. I tried to go back to help someone who was on the train tracks with their bike and a bike trailer, and was told that if I stepped any further, I'd get a trespassing charge.
When was this?
Around when the cops showed up, around 9.
And so what was your response to this?
I yelled over, checking in, make sure they were okay, and then I had to walk away.
Not being interested in a second citation, as I understand, you're one of the notorious criminals who's actually been taken to the pokey.
Yeah, first wasn't a citation, it was a misdemeanor arrest, but they filed no charges, and nothing ever came of it.
How much of your time was, should we say, impinged upon by that arrest?
About 4, maybe 5 hours.
Did you learn anything in the accommodations that they provided for you?
Their food is shit, whoever's cooking there.
Criticism of the cuisine?
Oh, yes, the deconstructed ham sandwiches were quite unpleasant.
Insufficient mustard, I suppose?
Ah, there was a packet of mustard. I didn't trust the meat, though.
Well, are you yourself a carnivore?
I suppose you could say that.
Me too. But that's another issue, I guess. When was the date of this arrest where they finally brought you to a bear, took you in?
I want to say somewhere between like the 11th or the 18th, I forgot, of not last month, but I think June.
And do you have the sense that the police know who you are in terms of your work here in this area?
Oh, yes. I had a cop call me by my full name the other day. That was quite unpleasant.
Mark of respect, perhaps.
Oh, no.
Disrespect, perhaps.
Mad disrespect. And I disrespect them.
Well, I won't comment on that. So, as the hour grew later and approached 11 o'clock, was there any response, I should say, from the people going to and from housing matters or funding matters, as I like to correct myself when I call it housing matters? Did you see anything or hear anything? Was there a lot of transiting back and forth, or were people blocked by this fencing?
They're always blocked by it. You can get through on a side street on from Fern to Coral, but there's nowhere to park and nowhere to hang out, sit down, relax. It's all just this, you can feel the anxiety buzzing in the air. No one wants to be around that.
Dig it. You've been doing this for, on how many occasions did you go down to Coral Street? Does this make?
Maybe 9-ish, maybe more.
And do you notice, what's your feeling about it? Do you feel your time was well spent? Do you feel... perhaps it was well spent at the time, but it's discouraging what's going on. Are you enraged? Are you weary? Or any mixture of these things?
Well, my time is certainly being well spent. I hear how much us just being there is helpful for people, whether we're moving things or just witnessing, because the cops do act somewhat different when we're attempting to hold them accountable. Not much, but... people are grateful that we're there, and not that I need anyone's approval, but it's nice to know that people want us there.
And this is likely to be our nearly parting song, but it's called The Empire Strikes Back, and again, it's one of the best of Itsuno. David Rowick's likely the writer.
Real together again. There have been so few times when that wasn't the case, and it may be stated the president was assassinated. Smooth sailing since that time. Every congressman ready for war crimes, ready for more military spending if their seats are worth defending.
53, overthrow Iranian democracy, put the dictator in power, then the Shah, who they bring back again, who ruled for foreign government when all the oil profits went until the Iranian people were free when they fought and won their sovereignty. After destroying Afghanistan and Iraq, the empire strikes back to try to conquer the noble land, invading Iran. Can tell, lots of burning oil wells, lots of burning human beings from burning buildings that they're fleeing, lots of children buried alive, and among those who survive, lots of orphans with thoughts in mind that someday they'll respond in kind. After destroying Afghanistan and Iraq, the empire strikes back to try.
And those are all the updates from this time around. If you have more information about ongoing homeless civil rights concerns, or lack of civil rights, actually, seems to be, unfortunately, the ongoing deal, get back in touch with me on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 831-423-4833. And let me remind you of a few meetings. There's one today at noon. You might not have missed it yet. It's the anti-FLAC demonstration in coordination with a nationwide beginning of Fuck the FLACs week or some such thing. Starts at the county building that we think at noon and goes from there today. Then we have the Amy Chen Mills rally coming up at the Woodhouse Brewery day after tomorrow, if you're listening to this on the 16th. At 5:30 p.m. at 119 Madroni Street. This is the one running against Killer Coonerty, as Keith McHenry calls him. The next day, on the 19th Wednesday, there's a Santa Cruz Homeless Union meeting at the Red Church, which is the Calvary Episcopal Church across from the deplorable and frightening uprising building on what was the Farmer's Market area. That's from 3:30 to 5, and it's in one of the back red buildings of that church complex. You've got to check out the signs there to find out which building it is. It's not the usual fireside room. The whole place is being remodeled, or the outside area, anyway. And the next day, it's a Huff meeting. Huff meets at the Museum of Art and History, or actually right behind it in Abbott Square. That's on Front Street 706 or thereabouts. It's we start at 1:30. We go to 3:30, and you're welcome to come and bring your own coffee. Then next Saturday, the 22nd, in front of the Coonerty Bookshop, Bookshop Coonerty, as I call it, there's the Killer Coonerty Rally. I'll be using it if I get there, which I suspect I will, to raise the issues of the current anti-homeless laws, whether it's the sleeping ban, the lodging law, the don't sit near a building law, the anti-panhandling laws, those that are used discriminatorily against homeless folks particularly. As for the upcoming flashback set, we have three flashbacks from 1997, the fall time. First is September 25th, and it's features beginning. We begin with Skidmark Bob,
on the net enforcement team antics, going after, pumping up the police stats with lots of drug war busts, going after innocent marijuana users. An ancient interview with Keith McHenry, who was in those days up in San Francisco struggling to set up the free food process and dealing with a recalcitrant San Francisco administration. I think actually things are getting better around 1997, but you listen and find out. October 22nd, it was coming up, and I think it still is, Police Brutality Day. You'll hear discussion of that and the protests that we did both prior to that and perhaps if you listen in on to October 22nd, which we aren't doing today, but you can find in the Huff archives, you'll learn more about that. Donna Dice gives us the tenant union report along with Marco Marocchi, who were the tenants union folks. You get to hear more about her and him and the organization. Quite a group, actually, at the time. A report about the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's closing of its encampment area. Well, continued closing of it. And lots of street interviews from Kathy from the River Street Shelter, evicted because she'd outstayed her 30 days. Jim, ticketed and targeted for panhandling for... he was also selling street spirit down there on Pacific Avenue, in violation of both Santa Cruz City Code and the First Amendment. But, well, that's our police department at times. Then you move to the October 12th, 2017, 1997 flashback, sorry about that. We begin with a lengthy discussion with David Silva about events going on in those days, corporate city council spending, a lengthy analysis of the upcoming council meeting. In those days, we did council meeting analysis before the council meeting and encouraged people to go to council and try to sort of clarify and analyze and criticize what they were doing so as to let the community know really what was not being done by city council. You'll get to hear Carol Denny on the Wary housing arrests where activists were trying to open up the San Francisco Presidio to low-income housing, real low-income housing, even homeless housing, I think it was. I was arrested in one of those activities, and so was Carol. She talks about that. And then we go to the Eureka South Spit Jetty scene where we hear Dr. Wendy Ring talk about a bogus health scare being used as an excuse to clear away an encampment. And you'll be hearing more about the South Spit Jetty struggle in the final of the three 1997 flashbacks to October 19th, where you get a lot of interviews and on-the-scene shouts and such from the Police Accountability Day rally gathered at Friendship Corner, Hippie Corner, what is now just Cathcart and Pacific, I guess where Five Guys is at the moment. More from Marco Marocchi on the tenants union, how they were using, they were actively going after the city's eviction assistance of landlords, or maybe it's just the legal system's assistance, but and that's more the courts than the city, but it all seems part of a combine in a way. You'll hear Donna Dice talking about that too, how this project was to, Donna and Marco reached out to all the folks who were getting eviction notices and offered them help and actually also recruited them for a tenants union. I read the flyer that I wrote for the Metro Youth about the abuses against young people in Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue and elsewhere. And again, we get back to the South Spit Jetty with more from Dr. Ring on this phony health hazard. And also you'll hear march from downtown to the police station to the jail as a sort of a celebration of people empowering themselves against police state stuff. and finally a little bit of poet Julia Vinograd from her book Eye of the Hand. Then we have a cutoff because we don't have all of the October 19th show, but you get some of it. So listen to it if you want, enjoy it if you can, and learn from it and put those lessons into practice here in Santa Cruz, because we have the same problems, only worse, because unfortunately there's a less sympathetic population, a more privileged one, a wealthier one, and folks are being, as you heard from Keith McHenry, being forced out of the Palomar, something I haven't covered much of, and maybe may get into later in the next show. That's about it. Get in touch with me on the Huff Line if you have news or views that you want to put up over this kind of netcast, which I do have been doing regularly and will likely continue, but got to wake up first. It's kind of hard to do when you're falling asleep on the mic. But hey, I'll keep trying, likely. Thanks for listening.